This recording was made October 23, 1977, at the North County Christian Center in San Marcos, California. The speaker is Pastor Harold Bredesen. All rights reserved.
Could we turn to the scriptures? Psalm 42. I'm going to read it in the Living Version, beginning with verse 7. All your waves and billows have gone over me, and floods of sorrow pour upon me like a thundering cataract. Yet day by day the Lord also pours out his steadfast love upon me, and through the night I sing his songs and pray to God who gives me life. O God, my rock, I cry, why have you forsaken me? Why must I suffer these attacks from mine enemies? Their taunts pierce me like a fatal wound. Again and again they scoff, where is this God of yours? But, O my soul, don't be discouraged. Don't be upset. Expect God to act. For I know that I shall again have plenty of reason to praise him for all that he will do. He is my help. He is my God. What a gift. What a blessing. What refreshment water is. When you've been toiling in the heat of the day and you come in feeling grimy and hot and tired, what a joy to take deep gulps of water. There's no human-made beverage that can match it, is there? Or to step into the shower and let it just pour down upon you and drench away not only your grime, your perspiration, but your weariness. And when you have a sense of a need of change and you want a little adventure, what a joy it is to get out and go out upon the water in a boat or in water skis, or to plunge into it and let the surf carry you in. What a joy water is when you yourself are on top of it. Or if it's coming down upon you, it's coming from a direction that you can determine in the quantity that you wish, at a temperature you desire. When you are master, what a blessing water is. But when you're at its mercy, when it's descending thunderously down upon you as in a broken dam or in a typhoon, and you have nothing to say about where it comes from what direction, and in what quantities, much less what temperature, what a threat, what a calamity, what a disaster. That's the situation that we see David, a man after God's own heart. And he tells us that these waves and these billows that are descending upon him are floods of sorrow, trial, and difficulty. Can't you just see him, wave coming upon him and completely inundating him, and he comes up sputtering and coughing, gasping for air before he can fully recover. Another wave comes in, and there he sees a billow headed in his direction. A picture of helplessness and hopelessness. I wondered this morning, when I thought of continuing this series on this psalm, which we had such a wonderful response last Sunday, I saw how much need there was for this kind of teaching. But another little voice said, well, now, Harold, remember, there are people who are sort of sitting on the fence wondering whether they should become Christians or not. Every Sunday there are some who are teetering on the edge. And if you talk about the pain and the suffering and the loss involved in the Christian life, they're going to be scared off. They're going to say, well, if a Christian has as many problems as a non-Christian, who needs it? But you know, Jesus was never concerned about that, was he? He wasn't afraid he'd fright off people. He talked a great deal about the cost of discipleship. And he warned would-be disciples to count that cost. And sure enough, many said, this is a hard saying. And they walked no more with him. And did Jesus run after them and say, hey, wait a moment, you got me wrong. You didn't wait to hear about all the goodies. Let me tell you, the Christian life is like one big gift package. You get it at salvation, and all the rest of your life and your eternity, you're unpacking the goodies inside. No, he didn't lift one finger. He didn't take one step to try to resell them. Do you know what he said? No man can come unto me except the Father draw him. And I would say to you this morning who are trembling on the brink, if the Father is drawing you, you won't be deterred by what we're talking about. And if the Father is not drawing you, I could talk till I was blue in the face about all the goodies, and you wouldn't even hear. We said last Sunday that truth was a paradox, a tension between seeming contradictions. And we reeled off a whole list of them from 2 Corinthians 10. As sorrowful, yet always rejoicing. As poor, yet making many rich. As having nothing, and yet possessing all things. And we pointed out that these are not contradictions. These are two sides of the same coin. But the danger is that we emphasize one to the exclusion of the other. For example, in the charismatic renewal, we have the possessing all things side. Our forefathers were on the as having nothing side. They talked about enduring hardness, taking up your cross and following Jesus, and the trials and testings and temptation. But today we hear that, and it's true, we're the king's kid. And the king wants his kids to have the best. Delight thyself in the Lord, and he will give thee the desires of your heart. Both are right, and both are wrong. They're right if they always bear in mind the opposite side of the coin. Have you ever seen a non-Christian weeping over souls, or over his own sins for that matter? Have you ever seen him burdened for the state of his neighbors, or for the avalanche of vile, evil, pornography, child abuse that is flooding our land? No, our sufferings are every bit as great in time. But there are two big differences. First, it's the duration. Paul says that our affliction is light because it's only for a moment. A moment, you say? A moment. I've been wrestling with this problem for years. A moment. A moment compared with eternity. Compared with a trillion years, which is only the beginning of eternity. Well, the non-Christian has the dreary prospect that his sufferings are just a tiny, iddly-biddly, relatively speaking, foretaste of the suffering that is ahead of him for all eternity. Can you imagine a trillion years from now of suffering and knowing that it's only the beginning, that there's no prospect of relief? Now, preacher, you sound like a hellfire and damnation preacher. No, I'm just telling it like it is. That's the way Jesus told it. That's the way Paul told it. Paul didn't worry about anybody accusing him of being a hellfire and damnation. You know, that phrase is concocted by Satan to get people to label and lump a preacher who tells it like it is. The other great difference in the suffering between the Christian and the non-Christian is that the character of the suffering. For the non-Christian, suffering is an unwelcome stranger, a horrible enemy to be avoided at all costs. To a Christian, a mature Christian, a Christian in the know, a Christian who knows his word, suffering is not a stranger. It's a friend. It's not an enemy. It's a servant. Let me read the words of Paul, for example. He was no stranger to suffering. In Romans 5:3-5, he says, we rejoice. We don't lament. We don't curse God. We don't say, how could this ever happen to me? We rejoice in our suffering because we know that suffering builds perseverance, and perseverance builds character. So then, suffering is a builder, not a negative something. It's constructive. It's a builder, an upbuilder. Hebrews tells us that Jesus, though he was a son, yet learned he obedience through the things he suffered. He learned from suffering. So suffering is a teacher. And David in Psalms 119 says, it is good for me that I have been afflicted, that I might learn thy statutes. Suffering is a teacher. For we know, says Paul, that our light affliction is but for a moment. It worketh for us a far more exceeding weight of glory. It's not working against us. It's something that we let work for us. Philippians 1:29. For unto you it is given in the behalf of Christ not only to believe on him, but also to suffer for his sake. There's a key word there. Did you see it? It is given to you. It's a gift. Did you ever think of this seeming calamity that has befallen you, or deprivation, whatever it is, as a gift? 1 Peter 4:12, 14. Beloved, think it not strange concerning the fiery trial that is to try you, as though some strange thing happened unto you, but rejoice, inasmuch as ye are partakers of Christ's suffering. So then, it's a sharing. Anything we share with Jesus is blessed, isn't it? Any kind of sharing that we can have with Jesus is something to be coveted, isn't it? And again, in 2 Timothy 2:12, Paul says, in Philippians, he cries out, that I might know him and the fellowship of his suffering. Suffering is fellowship. Suffering is fellowship with one another. You can't have real fellowship with other people. You can't really know people unless you suffered yourself. You can't really help them. It's suffering with other people, but most of all, it's suffering with Jesus. It's fellowship with him. I think some of my most precious times with Jesus have been those bittersweet times of suffering. Then there's like a husk that comes off your soul, and the barriers between you and Jesus just melt away, and you just rest in his arms. Oh, there's such a wonderful old Lutheran hymn. I heard the voice of Jesus say, come unto me and rest. Lay down, thou weary one, lay down thy head upon my breast. I came to Jesus as I was, weary and worn and sad. I found in him a resting place, and he has made me glad, glad. Oh, if you want to have fellowship with Jesus, become a partaker in the fellowship of his suffering. All thy waves and thy billows have gone over me. You know, one way I just love to preach the word is to take one little sentence and emphasize each one in turn. It's just amazing how it opens up to you. Let's do that with this sentence. All. What is he saying? All your waves. David could say that, all thy waves, not billows, as practically no one else, with the exception of Job, could say it. He, for, I don't know, was it 7 years, was there in the wilderness of En-Gedi like a hunted animal, pursued by Saul's legions. One of the scenes in Israel is not the Holy Sepulchre and some of these other things, but one of the scenes I most appreciated was the wilderness of En-Gedi, because they haven't been able to build a church over it. It is one of the most desolate wildernesses you've ever seen, down in the area where the Dead Sea Scrolls are found, alongside the Dead Sea. You've never seen a more dead area than that Dead Sea area. That was stress for 7 years. And during that time, you remember, he and his companions came back to the camp and found
At this point, the person handling the original recording had to stop the tape and turn it over, so we lose a few words.
And to compound the terrible direness of that situation, David's companions, who had also lost their wives, were ready to kill him. They had to have somebody to blame. There was stress in that situation. There was stress when David's son, the apple of his eye, his favorite son, turned against him and with the head of an army sought to kill him. There was stress when David fell into deep sin, and for a whole year as he sought to rationalize, God's hand was heavy upon him. So much stress. And I'm emphasizing this, friends, because I feel there are people right here this morning who are saying everything that could happen to anybody has happened to me. Well, there's hope for you in these words. All thy waves and thy billows. A wave speaks of endless succession. You've just barely survived one wave, and the other one is descending upon you. There's a certain adventure in the Christian life when the first big problem comes up and you say, "My, I wonder how God's going to get me over this one." And then when you barely survive that one, and another one, and then another one, and then another one, and then another one, and you finally start getting a little weary, a little punch drunk. That's the way David was feeling, wave after wave. But it wasn't just waves, it was billows. What is a billow? A billow is a massive wave. That isn't a trouble. That isn't a distress. That's dark tragedy. Catastrophe. And that hits you. And you say, "God, have you got it in for me? Why should this happen to me?" It's that inexplicableness that makes it seem so tragic. You know, God has done a lot of things in my life. I'm going to ask him about when I get up there, aren't you? I've seen you, God, permit a lot of things that I just shake my hands at, that I wouldn't permit if I was God. Fortunately for you, I'm not. I got an answer from C.S. Lewis, from whom I've gotten so many answers, especially in the early stages of my Christian life. He has a book on suffering, and he says a surgeon and his little boy were wonderful pals. Till one day a wicked man came to that little boy and he says, "You think your daddy is pretty nice, don't you?" "Sure do, best daddy in all the world." "That's because you don't really know him. Do you know what kind of a man your daddy is? He's the kind of a man who straps a person to the table so he can't defend himself, and then he jabs needles in him or gasses him so he goes unconscious, and then he takes out a sharp knife and he cut things out of him, like his heart or something, and the man bleeds, and sometimes they die. That's the kind of a daddy you've got." And the little boy says, "I don't know why my daddy does it, but I know my daddy, and I know that if he does it, it's for some good reason." That's what I find myself saying over and over again when Satan tries to point out something to me as an example of the injustice and the unlovingness and the lack of wisdom of my heavenly daddy. I don't have to explain. I just say, "I don't know why he does it, but I know my daddy. I know that he is all love, that he is all wisdom, that he is all power, and he wouldn't let anything happen to me except it was for my good. All thy waves and thy billows have gone over me." Gone over me. If he said have gone under me, that would be victory. But to go over me, that means I'm overwhelmed. I'm helpless. I'm hopeless. That's a wonderful place to be. Utterly helpless. Utterly hopeless. Utterly dependent upon God. And friend, if you haven't let your testing bring you to that point, you haven't learned what God wanted to do through it in your life. You haven't heard his voice, as I heard it quite recently, have gone over me. A picture of helplessness and hopelessness. But there's one word we skipped over that changes the whole situation. All thy waves and billows. They're yours, God. They come through Jesus. I've said many times from this pulpit that on the cross, all the sin of all the world, including yours and mine, was poured into one cup and given to Jesus to drink. But friends, it wasn't just the sin that was poured in that cup. It was the sorrow, the suffering, the pain, the sickness that had come into the world through sin. And that's why it doesn't say the Lord hath laid on him the iniquity of us all and stop. It says, surely, surely he has borne our griefs and carried our sorrows. And that's why nothing can come into your life and my life that first hasn't been taken by Jesus upon himself. So it's his then, isn't it? If he took it upon himself, it's his. And he only lets that go through. The whole brunt of these waves and these billows struck him. And he only lets those go through that he can use in our life as our teachers, as our upbuilders, as our friends. And if you're a child of God, then Satan is going to attack you. But remember, nothing can come through Jesus that isn't for you a servant, a friend, a builder up, a teacher. Praise God. So think it no strange thing. Don't think of suffering as an enemy, but as a gift. Providing, of course, that you're listening to God and obeying him. That's always the sufferings we bring on ourselves for our willful disobedience. We can't blame God for, can we? But this morning, if you're seeking to please God, if you're seeking to be a joy to his heart, and still you're going through deep waters, then my word to you is Peter's word to the people of his day. Humble yourself under the mighty hand of God. Don't think of it as the hand of Satan. It's the hand of God at work in your life. Humble yourself under it, and he will exalt you in due season. Not in your season, in due season. So right now, Lord, we say with Job, though you slay me, yet will I trust you. We say, he doeth all things well.
For more information on Harold, go to www.haroldbradison.com.